Welcome to the Become Nomad podcast, whether you're already a nomad or aspiring to become one. We're here to supply you with relevant information to help keep you on the road until you get to know Thai food, and then you're probably going to stay in Thailand all your life. I'm back on the road after 3 very good months in Israel visiting the family. 2017 has been a very interesting year. It's been a very fun year as well. Of faraway destinations. Started in Spain, then I did a little bit of a ferry jump to Africa, then I spent half a year in Colombia, got back to Spain, then I did Portugal, and now finally, as the introduction implied, Chiang Mai in Thailand. So there are many reasons that kept me in Europe in the last 4 years. Flights were cheap, distances are shorter, a lot of diversity between places like Ireland, Spain, Belarus, and so on. The time zone is not a problem for me. Working with an international team in Colombia, my days started at 7 a.m. in morning calls and ended at 12 when everyone else got out of the office, Europe and in Israel. And here in Thailand, my days actually started around 1 p.m. and end very, very late. Still, there is a lot of enjoyment of getting to know new places, and I totally recommend it, especially considering that this is November. November, or even December now, is actually quite cold in Europe, or very, very cold. And after 4 straight winters, it's time to really avoid winter, another winter in Europe. Kind of thinking about it, digital nomad is basically giving you the gift of flexibility. And if you end up in Europe in the cold at winter, there's probably something wrong with you. Like there was something with me for the last 4 years. So something to consider. Now, as for Thailand, it's been a nice ride so far. I've only been here for a week, spent a few days in hectic Bangkok, which has very good vibes, really like it. But if you're listening to this podcast long enough, you know that I'm not a big fan of big cities in general. I decided to move to Chiang Mai. It's interesting, as a side note, to say that when I first visited Thailand in 2007, it was something totally new. I still remember the feeling, actually, and I was wondering if I'm going to have it again when I arrived again. I already knew the answers, to be honest to that, and the answer is no. The shock and awe changed to mild surprise and fun. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that I envy those of you who get to know regions or new cultures of the world for the first time. I still have a few myself, but not that many. Basically, I envy you because the feeling of the first time of visiting a new type of place cannot be replaced, and it can also not be repeated the way you feel about it. Get to the road as fast as you can. There is too much to see. Now, as for my first impressions from Chiang Mai, basically, I came here for one big reason. It's the capital of digital nomad of the world. By far, it is the place that has most digital nomads that I've ever encountered. Pretty amazing, like the density and how many people are here. Good quality of people. It's really fun. It's nice to meet people. It's easy to meet people. But other than that, for the city itself, I don't care that much for the city. There are no sidewalks. It's very hard to cross the street, sometimes very dangerous as well. However, the food is amazing. Thai food is my favorite by far. And the costs of life are extremely cheap. And that's probably the reason that got most of the digital nomads here. Really, you can get amazing value for your money. And it's becoming a very nice hub of digital nomads. But as I mentioned before, I'm always attracted to those smaller, more relaxed places like Minsk, my farm in Bucaramanga in Colombia, and Saloniki. And why do I always run away from hubs or sit by myself in the corner of rooms in lectures? I don't know. I guess I have to find it out with my psychologist, but hopefully my future one. I can't afford one. But hopefully you're not the same. And hubs are good because as a digital nomad, social life is critical. And you're going to have more than you need of a social life in Chiang Mai. Another side note, I'm starting to meet a lot of the folks from Remote Year and all those programs that actually allow you to travel with a group. It's a lot more expensive for sure. I have to say that I mocked this phenomenon about 2 years ago when I first heard about it. And now I totally understand the benefits, if you can afford it, of traveling with your own community or a tribe. So pretty interesting. I might even check it in the future, although I have to say that I really enjoy my freedom and I really like to decide when is the right time to move from a place to a place. So you kind of lose this flexibility with those programs that are basically taking you together with a group, changing locations more or less once a month all over the planet. So very interesting concept. I will probably not do it, but still find it a lot more reasonable than 2 years ago when I first heard about it. And now for a new section on the blog, a sponsor section. So my dream, I've been waiting for this for a very, very long time. My dream was always to get a sponsor for the show. It actually changed last year to get more than one listener. And speaking of listeners, I want to give special thanks to Michelina posting on Become Nomad Facebook page that kind of reminded me that we have a few listeners. So Michelina, you're probably the reasons of why this post or episode was released before the end of 2017. So thank you. Back to the sponsorship part, what I realized is that maybe I can't have listeners, but at least I can have a sponsor because I can actually sponsor my own projects. That's what I'm going to do. So here we go. So as some of you know, I've been working on a global startup ecosystem map. URL for that is startupblink.com. Basically, we have more than 60,000 startups, co-working spaces, accelerators, and investors registered. So if you have a startup or if you have a co-working space or whatever entity that has to do with the startup ecosystem, startups are so cool, by the way. I'm so glad that I picked this project. It would be great if you go to startupblink.com and register it on the map. This is totally free. After you register, you might consider joining one of our programs. We have two programs now. The first is an inner circle program that will give your project traction and connect you to other awesome entrepreneurs. The other program is Community Leaders Program, which basically allows you to lead your local startup community in the city of your choice. So data on those two programs can be found on startupblink.com. Amazing. We have a sponsor. We did it. The episode today is due to me picking a not so amazing accommodation in Chiang Mai, which is, by the way, getting better because I discovered today that the breakfast is free. And this happened after I really hurried into booking something without giving a lot of thinking. As some of you know, I spoke about this in the past. Most of our episodes are a mix of social pressure, like the one from Michelina, although she was very nice, she was pressuring me, but also from, and mainly from, an unfortunate incident that kind of makes me go back to the basics and kind of figure out what is the right strategy to handle the situation. So without further ado, our topic for today is short-term accommodation strategy for digital nomads, dedicated to Michelina and her husband in Bangkok. Hope you enjoy. So although we've spoken a lot about the importance of slow travel and staying in places for much longer periods of time, there are many situations that require us booking accommodation for a week or less. So in this article, we'll focus on strategy and tactics for booking this type of location for those short-term accommodation only. Probably going to do one on long-term accommodation in the future. Now, please note, as always, and I kind of repeat this point, it's kind of a thread that keeps on coming back in our episode. This is a very personal episode based on my own priorities. And the idea over here is that you shouldn't really copy paste what I say, but kind of use it as maybe a template to build your own thing or your own preferences or process based on your needs and style. So first of all, let's speak about why, if we already agreed that slow travel is the best, why are there situations where it's worthwhile to book a place for 1 week maximum? The first reason is that, as I mentioned in one of the articles before, I never commit to a city for more than 1 week, meaning I never make a decision of staying in a place for more than 1 week, because basically I want to experience the vibes and the chemistry that I have with the city. This is something that is not defined. It can't really be predicted. There were places like Zagreb where I went with the idea of staying for 2 days and I ended up staying for 3 months. And there were places like London that I thought I'm gonna settle down in and actually should have stayed 2 days with my very meager budget, because London is not a place to stay when you're on budget. So the idea is, again, kind of experience the city, and that's why booking a place for only 1 week or less makes a lot of sense. Now, the second reason is that if I decide to stay, I wanna meet the owners and visit the actual room and apartment if I'm booking a place for more than a week or preferably for a month. I don't like to make virtual decisions for the long term. Virtual decisions, that's a new catchphrase I'm gonna use. So the third reason why I'm actually promoting this thing of booking a place for a very short term is that sometimes I do something that I call hostel or Airbnb hopping, which means that basically I'm going, even if I stay in a city for 2 months, I might be changing locations every week. Now, I know it sounds crazy, but it has some very, very unique benefits. More than anything, really getting to know the city very well, because you're spending a week in this neighborhood and then you're switching to this neighborhood and to this neighborhood. It can be a little bit intense, but sometimes when I'm in the mood, I do it, and you actually meet a lot of people as well. So many, many reasons to kind of consider booking a place for only a short term. So let's start with where I book those places. What are the platforms that I'm using? So the first one, probably not a lot of surprises here, is booking.com. I found booking.com to be the most diverse site out there for accommodation, especially for budget single rooms. And I'm currently in a period of my life that I'm preferring single rooms and not dorms. If you're a backpacker, by the way, hostelworld.com might make more sense for dorm rooms. Although I have to say that booking.com also got very, very strongly into the category of dorm room, and it seems like they even have more supply there than Hostelworld. Now, in this category of those aggregators, I also want to mention Hotels Combined as another extended aggregator site that I've used various times, and Agoda.com as a good accommodation resource in Asia. So the second category of the places where I'm booking from, and basically on the first category, I only go for booking.com because it's enough. Basically, I go to the others if I feel like the supply isn't good enough or I'm kind of not sure about the place. The second thing that I'm checking other than booking.com for those short-term accommodation is Airbnb. Airbnb is probably the best resource out there for living with locals. It should be noted that for those of you who spend more time traveling than working, I actually recommend a lot more couchsurfing. Couchsurfing is amazing, but is only a good option for people who are free and can spend the time with interacting and spending time with their host, because that's the idea of couchsurfing. I'm not doing it because I'm working, but couchsurfing is absolutely the best. The second best is probably Airbnb, where you pay, but then you don't really feel obliged to spend a lot of time with the host. So this is another category. And by the way, I don't know which one I prefer. There are times where you kind of want to have a little bit more privacy and kind of feel a little bit more a tourist, and then you go to booking.com, and there are times that you need a little bit more interaction, and that's where Airbnb comes into a picture. In Airbnb, I'm booking almost always, I'm traveling alone, a single room. So I'm sharing an apartment with someone. That's part of something that we're going to touch on as we continue this article. But before that, I want to say that the idea over here is keep it simple. And that's why usually I only use two sites, Airbnb and Booking, and that's where it ends. Sometimes I even use one of them when I'm really tired and I find a really good match in one of them. I won't even go to the other one. The idea is that short-term decisions on short-term stay should not take a lot of your time. One of the biggest, let's say, pitfalls of this nomadic lifestyle is to delay taking decisions on things that don't matter that much. So if you're booking a place for 2 months, of course, you want to think a lot about it. But if you're booking a place for less than a week, it makes sense to spend half an hour on it maximum and then just let go. Because the idea is that if you don't, half of your trip or half of your nomadic lifestyle is only going to be planning for things. And that's not ideal. Now, what do I take into consideration when I'm looking for a place? So the first thing that I do is go on the price. So accommodation costs are probably going to be your biggest expense item, especially if you're traveling long term and you slow travel, so you don't spend a lot on flights. So the idea over here is by lowering your standards by just a little, you can make a giant difference on your budget on the long term. My basic guideline is that I avoid comfort and posh places, let's say, and focus more on the places that can offer me what I need for a reasonably good price. It should also be said over here that I almost don't spend time in my accommodation other than sleeping, because during the day I really like to separate my work from where I live. The idea over here is that I'm trying to leave home as early as possible and go back home as late as possible. So that's why I don't care that much about the place itself and so on and so on. And probably if you're working from your hostel, from your Airbnb, you are probably going to have higher expectations than me because I'm using co-working extensively. So this should be said. Now, the idea over here with the price is that if you're making the price your initial filter, you get a lot of noise out of the equation, because all those places that you can't afford, you don't want to see them in front of your face. So the idea is take out all those places first. Now, the second thing that I look for is quality. And over here, the internet comes very, very handy in providing me with past visitors' reviews. And the reviews are very, very powerful. You can use the intelligence of the masses and filter out, and that's what I do, I filter out all those locations with low average review. I also avoid places with few or no reviews, because bad surprises are probably worse than a known poor condition. I also try to book places with recent reviews, since it might indicate that the place is shut down if it doesn't have reviews in the last year. At the situation in the Ukraine that I booked something in a small village close to Odessa on the beach, and basically it was shut down. It was 9:30 at night, no trains back. I'll tell you about it some other time. One more thing that I do with the reviews is that I'm usually skimming the reviews and trying to find those red flags of the things that I want to avoid, safety, noise, and so on and so on, and the praises of the things that I care about. For those things, my next priorities are very, very personal. You're most likely not to have them yourself. The idea over here is replace them with your own priority. So the first thing that I'm looking for is community. And being with the right people means a lot to me, even more than the quality of the place itself. So I'm trying to go over reviews to check how good is the interaction with the owners. That's especially in Airbnb, when they're probably the only ones you're going to speak with. And if there is a likelihood of interacting with fellow tourists. Also on Airbnb, there are some people who rent for various people, especially on booking.com. I like places that have dorms, which means that basically you're going to have a lot of tourists moving around. And there is something in places that have dorms, more atmosphere of socializing, which is nice in a way, especially if you have your own room and you don't have to kind of wake up at 4 a.m. when the drunk person comes into the room, which happens pretty often in dorms, and that's part of the fun for a certain age, but not when you get a little bit older. Now, one of the things that I do on interaction is that basically I go over the photos and try to check if there is a cool common space where you can meet people, because without it, it's going to be hard to meet people. The idea is that there is always the infrastructure, the setting that allows people to connect, and it's important that it will exist. Now, my second preference is the location. The idea over here is that I don't like the concept of cities. Cities are giant concrete buildings and cars and so on and so on. That's why I'm trying to find places that are close enough to the city itself, or to the advantages of the city, which are co-working space, amazing social life. However, those places, I really prefer them to be quiet and more most importantly, fun to walk. So finding a place that is totally out of the city, like a farm or a village and so on, is a big priority for me. Although this one is usually only for longer stays. When I know that I'm going to stay 1 month or 2 months, it makes sense. For the shorter ones, I kind of want to know the city as well. So it makes sense to stay actually inside the city, but in the quiet suburbs and so on and so on. Those are the best that I prefer. And those one, by the way, have a lot more of a local vibe and so on. So that's more fun and authentic. Now, I'm a walking fanatic, which means that I love walking. And for me, it's like a ritual or something that is very, very important to walk a minimum of 30 minutes in the morning. But those walks can only be epic when I do them in places without much traffic and preferably with an amazing nature setting. So, for example, by the river, by the beach, giant park, mountains, and so on and so on. Those exist inside of cities also. So you just have to find the right city and the right location within the city. This is critical. For example, in Chiang Mai, in my first 2 days, I did walks and they were kind of frustrating, you know, when try to walk over the street and nobody stops and there is a lot of traffic and noise and so on and so on. So the idea over here is find this location inside the city that can allow you to have this walk. One more thing I'm going to check on the location is the proximity of my accommodation to a potential co-working space, which means that, let's say there is a lot of nature and things are quiet and so on and so on, but your 1 hour of a ride to your co-working space, it might not be so good. And I just had this recently in Portugal, in Lisbon. So the idea is also check how easy is public transport, which is important, or if you have Uber and stuff like that in places that are low cost. So that has to do with the location. Now, if you were dozing off during this podcast, I'm going to end with 6 practical steps, which is the short version of this article, actually. So here we go. Those 6 steps are going to ensure that you're going to have an amazing stay, if you're exactly like me. The first 2 steps that I take has to do with filtering, okay? So as we said before, the first step is filter in those sites by maximum price. And then sort the results by price, starting from the lowest. And then you have a lot cleaner list than what you started with all the options. Now, my second filter is to filter by average review score. In Booking.com, it's 8+. In Airbnb, it's 4+. And ignore all those locations with few reviews or no reviews. And be suspicious of the ones that have reviews but don't have recent reviews. So the idea over here is that after we filtered by price and by review score, we're left with about 20% of everything we had before, which is great. It's a lot more easy to find the place when you narrow the amount of places that you have to browse. Now let's move on to the picking phase. So on the picking phase, on practical step number 3, because we want to be very methodological over here, on practical step number 3, I go over the reviews themselves and read them. Try to figure out what is super great about this place and what is really annoying. I specifically look for problems for things that I care about, which are noise at night, rundown place, and also bad internet. And the idea is that since I only arrived and I'm probably going to stay for a week and maybe I don't even have a co-working space, the internet quality in the short-term locations are even more important than in the long-term. Because if I'm staying long-term, you can be pretty sure that I have a co-working space. So let's jump to step 4. Step 4 is community. We talked a lot about community and the importance of not being alone also on this post. I will make it easy for you. On community, I ask myself one basic question that takes into account everything we discussed in this article. And the question is as following. When I get out of my room in the morning and I go inside of the building at night, what are the chances that I will say hello and start a chat with someone? If they're low, I avoid. Easy. Now, the next one is the location, and that's less easy. What I do over here in the location is that actually I switch on those accommodation sites to map mode. They have a mode of a list and of a map. So I'm switching to the map. To overcomplicate it, I also switch over there to satellite view. What does satellite view do? It basically gives you the terrain. You actually can see the chunks of green and the chunks of concrete. And that's important for me. The idea is that I check the proximity to the main road of the location, which means that it's going to be super, super noisy and polluted as well. Like, I had a few locations that were by the city's giant roads, and I avoid them now. I also try to find out how can I get out, how easy it is if I stay there to get out of the urban mess. And I'm trying to identify a walk that is basically starting less than 5 minutes from the second I get out of the accommodation. This amazing morning walk that is in nature. And again, that's why I'm using the map view and the satellite view to kind of figure out where is the chunk of green close to where I'm staying. And of course, check public transport options to see if I'm staying in a place, how am I going to get to the co-working space, preferably walking, but if not, are there other options and how long it's going to take. And that's basically it. The last step, step number 6, is to book the best option until Friday. Why until Friday? You know my weekend routine. If you listen, then basically Fridays to Sunday, I just go somewhere else, totally new. That's basically it. This is my short-term accommodation procedure. Important to say that even if you follow those steps, some places will end up disappointing you. You can't avoid the surprises. And actually, the surprises are the really good stories that you can tell after, so you don't also want to avoid the surprises. And that's basically it. Going to have Thai dinner, and I hope it was useful for you. And until the next time, have fun.